Welcome to Component 4, Introduction to Information and Computer Science. This is Unit 10, The Future of Computing. This unit will cover five topics. Trends in computing. Interfaces used to communicate with computer systems. Cloud computing. The changing social implications of the use of computer systems. And the ubiquity of computers in our daily lives. To determine where we may be in the future, we need to look at where we've come from. Computers are still a relatively recent field and have only become available to the general population in recent decades. Of course, we would like to know what the next years have in store for computer systems, but we will start by taking a look at what has happened to get us to where we are today. We will start by taking a look at just a few predictions, and then see how the ownership of computers has changed since their inception. We will also see how system sizes have changed and how the computational memory and system storage capabilities have changed. Finally, we will look briefly at how computer access has changed. As we all know, we don't have a perfect vision of the future, and even those who help to create today's environment were not able to see all the possibilities of today. We must also remember that not all quotes that you hear are necessarily accurate. Some are apocryphal and just make for a good story, but cannot be verified. Take the first example. I have traveled the length and breadth of this country and talked with the best people, and I can assure you that data processing is a fad that won't last out the year, which was reportedly said by an editor of business books in 1957. We can certainly believe that it was said in all seriousness, and it's quoted in academic journals. The second quote from the founder of Digital Equipment Corporation, which was a major computer manufacturer until its purchase by Compaq in 1998, can be verified. There is no reason anyone would want a computer in their home. This comment was made during a talk in 1977. Note that this reference was to computers controlling home systems, not just a personal computer. Again, a prediction that needs individual evaluation. These quotes are presented here as we will be speculating on the direction of computing. We can see the trends that brought us here, but there will likely be innovations that we cannot see as yet. We can, however, look at the past clearly. In the 1940s, computer systems were the property of governments. One of the first was ENIAC, dating from 1946. It stands for the Electronic Numerical Integrator and Computer, and was used for artillery firing tables as well as hydrogen bomb calculations. Computers started to be available to commercial entities in the 1950s. The IBM 701 dates from 1952, and the IBM 650 in 1954. These, of course, were expensive systems. The IBM 650 was available for purchase for approximately $500,000, which is $4 million in 2010 dollars, or lease for $3,500 per month, which is $30,000 in 2010 dollars. We started to see personal computers in the 1970s. These started being available in hobbyist kits and eventually to pre-assembled systems available for individual users. Note that home computers were still relatively expensive and had limited performance until recently, and it's likely what we view today as a high-performance system will be viewed as incredibly simplistic in the not-too-far-distant future. Computer systems have also changed significantly in size over the past decades. In the 1960s and earlier, computer systems filled rooms. Here we see supporting hardware. These are IBM 2314 disk drives and 2540 card reader and punch for an IBM 360 dating from around 1968. Fortunately, it didn't take too long for computer systems to shrink in size. On the left is what was called a mini computer in the 1970s, a PDP 1140 system from Digital Equipment Corporation, now in the Vienna Technical Museum. Notice the bank of switches at the bottom of the image. They're part of the console used to operate the computer. The system itself is approximately 6 feet tall. On the right is an early pre-assembled desktop system for personal use. It's a TRS-80 Model 1 from Tandy Corporation, also dating from the 1970s. These are starting to look much more familiar and much smaller than the room full of computer systems we started with. An early laptop computer. A compact Presario 1200 from the late 1990s is shown on the left. The trend in the reduction in size continues. A much smaller system, a Sony Vaio P-Series notebook, is shown on the right. This is a system with only an 8-inch display screen and was released in 2009. Finally, let's look at mobile devices. Are these computer systems? They include a processor and memory, internal storage, a user interface, and software applications that may be added and removed by the user. They aren't traditional systems, or at least not yet, but they can certainly be viewed as computer systems. Here we see one of the most prevalent, an Apple iPhone, introduced in 2007. These systems are 4.5 by 2.3 inches and weigh in at just a few ounces. Another major change in time has been the amount of internal system memory. Early home systems might have 1 kilobyte of system memory. Today, 2 or 4 gigabytes is common. That's an increase of several millionfold from the systems of the 1970s. A commercial computer server can be easily purchased today with 32 gigabytes of internal memory. The increase in available memory shows Moore's law, which is an observation that the number of components that can be placed on a circuit doubles every 2 years. This observation was made by Gordon Moore, the co-founder of Intel, in 1965. And is expected to continue through at least 2015. There have also been significant changes in external storage capacity. While there have been many forms, including paper and magnetic tape, let's concentrate on today's common medium, magnetic disk. A 1956 article by Welsh and Porter describes a system that stores 250,000 12-digit words per drum, or a bit more than a quarter kilobyte. The chart above shows the growth of current capacities of disk drives in the terabyte, or thousands of billions of bytes, available today for home systems. Note that this chart is on a logarithmic scale versus linear. The capacity growth has been immense. We will look at one last trend, system connectivity. Early systems were standalone. They were not connected to one another or accessible from an off-site location. In the 1970s and 1980s, remote access and connectivity was beginning to be provided over dial-up connections. It became possible to connect a terminal at a remote location and display 10 characters a second or so, and speeds began to increase. As with all other trends, the rate of growth was rapid to 28 and 56 kilobits dial-up connections, and then to the broadband speeds for home connections of megabits per second today. The rates of commercial connections increased as well. Gigabit connections are now commonly used for wired connections and are available externally. Wireless connections are also available. We see wireless hotspots available in many locations. And worldwide interoperability for microwave access, or WiMAX, is one technology that can provide connectivity up to 40 megabits per second in some areas. However, note that dial-up connections are still in use. Broadband or wireless connections are not always available. However, with the increasing number of mobile devices that use cell phone connections, this is likely to change, as well as the growing expectation of being able to access systems and services from anywhere, not just from a wired connection. To summarize, we've seen significant growth in the availability and capabilities of computer systems since their inception in the 1940s. We can expect to see that trend continue for the near future. What will the capabilities be beyond that? Let us continue to look at changes in computer systems by examining the way a computer is operated, the user interface. This is the mechanism by which data and commands are sent to the computer system, as well as the mechanism by which the results of computer processes are returned to the user. We'll see what we started with, what we have today, and what we might have in the future. Early analog computers were programmed using plug-in cables. Here we see ENIAC, which we discussed in the previous topic, with an array of cables to control this analog computer. Another early method was to use computer switches, such as we saw on the DEC PDP 1140. Here we see another stage forward in the user interface for computer systems. The image on the left is a computer punch card. Holes were punched vertically in the card to represent data by a machine, such as the one shown here. An IBM card punch introduced in the 1960s, though there was a model introduced in 1949. The cards could be used for both instructions and data, and blank cards were placed in the hopper on the right, punched using the keyboard, and then stacked on the left. If you ever think a keyboard is noisy, imagine a room full of card punches. And since holes were physically punched in the card, you could correct a typing mistake only under very rare circumstances. There's no unpunch capability to backspace and correct a mistake. Here we see what we start to think of as almost a modern user interface, a keyboard and monitor. This is an IBM 3278, used to connect to mainframe systems in the 1970s and 1980s. Even though this terminal is no longer manufactured, you may still see 3270 terminal emulators on some computers even today. This is the last piece added to bring us to what we consider a modern user interface, the mouse. The combination of keyboard with video display and mouse has become so ingrained in computer technology that it's often referred to simply as KVM for keyboard, video, and mouse. The mouse came into common use with the Xerox Star and Apple systems in the early 1980s, and KVM is still the most common user interface today, over a quarter of a century later. You may not think about it, but you'll use a touchscreen interface on a regular basis, very common in automated teller machines, as shown on the left, and you'll also see touchscreens used regularly in kiosks, such as when you check in for an airline flight. These are not a traditional computer system, but are specialized applications which use a computer system. The touchscreen itself was invented in 1971 and has been used in personal digital assistants with a stylus, as with the PDA on the right side of the slide. Note that the Apple Newton PDA, which was introduced back in 1993, had handwriting recognition with a stylus. And of course, touchscreens are in use today on many mobile devices. Tablets are a relatively new form factor, at least for common use, although they have been available since the late 1980s. They are designed for portability and tend to be small and thin and do not necessarily require a keyboard to use. They have had limited adoption, but the Apple iPad may be changing that. It has sold over 3 million units in the first 3 months it was available in 2010. This raises the question, is it a fad or a real trend in the technology adoption? We've seen mobile devices in the last topic and as devices that demonstrate the use of touch screens. Some devices also have integrated keyboards, as well as an alternative input device. These devices can be portable data assistants, or telephone systems such as the iPhone, which integrate telephone capabilities with internet access, such as web browsers and email clients, not to mention millions of applications available for personal use. Some of these applications are for medical use, such as drug references. The question that arises is whether tablets and mobile devices will eventually merge. As the capabilities of mobile devices increase, is a tablet and a mobile device redundant? Think of a typical user. Would they want to carry multiple devices for similar applications? Do you really need to carry a mobile device for its telephone capabilities, as well as a tablet for other tasks? It's likely that the two will merge into a device that has the capabilities of both in the near future. It may be larger than the current mobile device, but smaller than a tablet. Perhaps new technologies will allow expansion as required. Voice recognition is a technology that we've seen, at least in fiction, since the 1960s. There are commercial applications today, and voice recognition is built into some operating systems. You'll note, though, that the quality of voice recognition is still not at a level to replace today's medical transcriptionist. However, there has been limited success in specialized applications. Some of today's mobile devices can support the ability to recognize a limited command set. There is one device that's used in medical settings that does take advantage of voice recognition, Vocera, which is used in over 650 hospitals. The Vocera badge is worn by users, and simple commands are recognized for communication between the users. Rather than thinking small, think large instead. The advantage of size can be for the ease of sharing of information or clarity in display. Why should we limit ourselves to a computer screen? This is another option. Here, we're looking at a tabletop system at the Future Warfare Center's Simulation Center. Think of the size of your desktop. Shouldn't that also be your computer desktop? Or why use your wall just for a whiteboard or for pictures? What if that could be your display and input, rather like a very large tablet system? Finally, one more new trend is flexible hardware. Rather than the rigid devices in common use, new flexible devices may be available in the not-too-far-distant future. Roll-up keyboards are available today, and there is current research into organic light-emitting diode displays, which will allow for a flexible computer display. There is also research into smart textiles, fabric with sensors, and pixel displays. With the reduction in component size and the addition of flexible technology, we suddenly have many more options to consider. Will we fold up our computers in the future and put it in our pocket like a handkerchief? Or will we wear our next computer?